Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about Neville Dean and Taylor's 2009 film Gamer. Joining me today is my regular co-host, Tyler. How's it going, sir?
Word up.
Excellent. Also joining is friend of the show and writer for The Playing Field, Joe Leninger. What's up, Joe?
Hey, Ben. Glad to be here.
Yes, thanks for coming back. And joining us today is a very special guest. Michelle Madison is the co-host of the Video Game Outsiders podcast, the Warcraft Outsiders podcast, and the Food Network Humor podcast. She is also the co-founder of the Pop Hangover Network, which includes the very popular website, DamnYouAutocorrect.com. Michelle, thanks so much for joining us on the Not Just New Movies podcast.
Hi, guys. Happy to be here.
Awesome. Michelle, you've also got a book slated for release later this year. Is that right?
Yeah, actually, a couple of books are coming out. The Damn You Autocorrect book is coming out at the end of March, and a book that my sister and I worked on called Dear Asshole is coming out at the end of the summer, and it's sort of just letters that you can rip out and hand to the people in your life that you want to call an asshole but maybe can't. So
that's
I'm looking forward to that.
Cool. Well, do you want to tell maybe listeners who have never... who are unfamiliar with your work or you in general, maybe anything about yourself before we really get started?
As you said, I'm a gamer. That's probably, you know, my big hobby, not only World of Warcraft, but also consoles. I have all of them. And I've been doing the Video Game Outsiders podcast for like 5 years now.
Cool.
And it's just, it's a lot of fun. But, and then obviously you mentioned the Food Network Humor podcast and the Warcraft Outsiders podcast that I do as well. And Food Network Humor is also a fun website. We just sort of watch the Food Network and rank on them and make fun of them. And that's been pretty popular. But most of our energy has gone towards the Damn You Autocorrect site now, because that has been our most popular so far. And that's just auto-corrected, you know, grabs from iPhones and Android phones that people send in to us, and we really don't have to do a lot of work other than siphoning through submissions, but they're pretty humorous and, awesome. And embarrassing.
Yeah, totally. I've definitely come across that site before. I was pleased to find out that you were involved with it when I found out you were going to be a guest, so that's excellent. Okay, so if you guys are just joining us for the very first time, we start every episode with the character name game, transition into our media consume section where we talk about what we've been watching or anything like that, move into our review of the week, and finish up with listener voicemails and emails. You can also leave us a, or I'm sorry, you can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566. Or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. You can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. So the character name game this week, I will take control of that. This is a game we play in which I'll give you guys a character, and at the very end of the episode, you have to guess what movie that character is from, keeping in mind that there has to be some sort of loose connection between this and then a movie that actually just came out in wide release this past Friday in theaters. So the character for this week is Susan Calvin. Susan Calvin. So be thinking about that, and we'll return to it at the end of the show.
Oh, I think I know the answer.
Do you? Okay. All right.
Yeah.
We'll save
it. Blow you apart in 60 minutes, people.
Nice. All right. Well, one thing that we did very briefly on this podcast a while back that we haven't returned to is a game called In My Netflix. And I want to do this really quickly. I've only got
up my queue, Ben.
Up my queue, in my Netflix, up my Netflix, whatever variation you want to call. But
Joe came up with this idea, actually, Michelle. It's a pretty entertaining game.
Okay.
Yeah. So basically, it's very simple. The concept is I will present you guys with two movies, and you have to guess which one is actually in my Netflix queue as we speak. So let's go ahead and hit that theme music. All right, so welcome to In My Netflix, Up My Queue, whatever you want to call it. The panel today will be guessing the two choices, and here we go. I've got three of them for you guys. The first one, let's see if you guys can guess it. Which one of these is in my Netflix queue right now? Is it Schindler's List or Dances with Wolves? Any guesses? I guess since there's three of these, we'll go with give each person a chance to guess. So Joe, let's go with you for this one. What do you think?
Neither.
Is that an option?
That is not an option. So I guess you lose today, sir. I'm sorry.
Oh, wow.
The correct answer is Schindler's List, a movie I'm embarrassed to say that I've never actually seen. So
I was gonna go dance.
I've never seen that one, Joe. I've never seen
it. That was like one of your favorite five movies of all time. Seriously.
No, it still is. He just hasn't seen it.
We'll see. We'll see. I might be updating my top five favorite movie list after I see it. We'll see what happens.
I think it's totally in black and white. Seinfeld was making out during it on Seinfeld.
Oh, yes. I remember that.
About all I know about the movie.
Tyler, the historian, as always. Okay, Tyler, Michelle, let's go to you for this one. Which of these do you think, and I realize that you don't know me very well at all, but that's why this game is awesome. Which of these do you think is in my Netflix queue right now? Rudy or The Goonies?
Both good movies, and both, you know, have Sean Astin in them, so this is tough. This is like a trick question here. I'm going to go with The Goonies.
That is actually correct. Nicely done.
Okay, good.
another movie I'm embarrassed to say, which I've never seen. A lot of people in kind of our age bracket grew up watching
what?
This movie. I know.
Oh my God, that's bad.
I know. Yeah, I host a movie podcast and I've never seen The Goonies. I feel like I should commit Harry Carey or something. But
age bracket, how old are you?
Harry Carey.
No.
I think that movie came out in like 1986, Ben.
Well, you know, it's one of those movies that kids our age grew up watching, and I just...
Did you not have HBO as a child?
I didn't, actually.
Okay, that's why.
We had three channels and bootlegged VHS tapes.
All right. So, Tyler, let's go to you for the last one. Which of these is currently in my Netflix? Is it JCVD or The Three Amigos?
Oh, wow. Send me a curveball. JCVD.
It is actually The Three Amigos.
Ah, damn. That's probably not even... JCVD's probably only DVD, isn't it?
It may or may not be. I'm not sure.
Three Amigos. You haven't seen that either?
I have seen parts of that. I've never actually seen the whole thing all the way through. This is turned
You're
into...
You're disappointing so
this
many
revealing.
People.
Yeah, it's, yeah, exactly. It's turned into a disappointing session. Like, pull back the curtain on me and my movie embarrassments. But, all right, well, that was fun. We'll go ahead and wrap up the theme music. And
in Wizard of Oz, right, Ben?
Yes, thank you very much.
Make the curtain reference.
Yes, you douche. I have seen The Wizard of Oz. Thank you. All right, so let's go ahead and move into the media consume section. This is a part of the show where we talk about what we've been watching, any sort of TV shows or movies or concerts we've been to, anything like that, special events, whatever. Joe, let's start with you. What have you been consuming this week?
I haven't been watching a lot of TV because of the college basketball season. It's just now in the heart of it.
Yes.
But I did check out that new show on CBS called Mad Love with Jason Biggs. Have you guys heard of that one?
I have heard of it. I've never seen it.
I've seen it, Joe.
Yeah, it's almost exactly like How I Met Your Mother. It's like 28, 29-year-olds in the big city looking for adventurous times, I guess. And Jason Biggs and the girl from Scrubs, Sarah Chalky, yes.
Chalky.
And Judy Greer, who voices Cheryl on Archer, is in it.
Ah.
It's pretty funny. I hear it might get canceled, but it serves its Monday half-hour purpose, I think.
Well, the guy from Sons of Tucson's on it, too, which
carries
the cancellation curse.
Yeah, Tyler Labine, number one Canadian actor.
On what list? Are you just making this up?
I read that somewhere. But seriously, Sons of Tucson, great show.
You're pimping the show that's already been canceled. Good stuff. Okay.
Guns of Muthlon, better show.
All right. Tyler, or Joe, have you been consuming anything else? Or?
I did watch the Friday's episode of a show called, Blue Bloods, also on CBS. Has anybody seen this show?
No.
Is this the one with Tom Selleck?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I've never seen it. But.
It is prestigious.
Nice build up.
Droning. It is cop show at its max.
Okay.
Max Power with Donnie Wahlberg is just an a-hole cop.
Is it worth watching or no?
Oh, no. God, no.
Okay.
just like you think you're getting all Selleck all the time, kind of like a Chuck Norris character, but he's like kind of in the background. And Donnie Wahlberg just picks fights with people on screen. He's like, hey, what are you looking at? Hey, I'm on a
movie. Doesn't it take place in Boston? Don't they just fight constantly over there?
No, it's in the Big Apple.
I thought it was Boston.
Okay, well, Tyler, let's go to you. What have you been consuming this week?
Well, just before you, Skyped me in, I was playing Zork, a text adventure. Zork,
oh, yeah.
Zork 1. Have you ever heard of this, Michelle?
Yeah, that's old school.
Okay, yeah. I figured I'd bring on a computer game, video game topic since we're talking to you. Yeah, there's no pictures. It's just text, and you're, like, talking to this game and telling it to do things, and sometimes it says, yeah, you can do it, and then sometimes it says, no, you can't do that, or sometimes it says, I don't understand what you're saying. So it's very much trial and error, which goes against you because your points to moves taken ratio determines how well you play the game.
Ah.
So if you're spending 50 moves trying to understand the computer without getting any points, that's kind of working against you, which is what I do pretty much. But yeah, you walk around a lot, and it gets really confusing. I had to get a walkthrough, actually, because – and I'm kind of ashamed of myself because I'm doing this on my own. So I was like, oh, I'm just going to do it fresh, like 1980s style. But I could not keep all the locales in order of where they were. I was constantly wandering around aimlessly, not knowing where I was.
You always run into like, the same bush. You're trying to keep pressing east, 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 and you just circle around. Yeah. It's very fun.
There's a forest, and I was like, okay, leave forest. It's like, you can't do that.
You're stuck.
Like, fly away, and it's like, you can't do that. So, it's easy to download. On my blog, I'm going to probably promote links to these sites that I go to download all these really old games that are, 15 kilobytes now, which take a second to download.
Nice.
And, there's free software you can run because I don't think Windows 7 supports a lot of these old games, so you have to get software that runs the games for you, and that's free too. So you can pretty much enjoy all these 1980s, 1990s era games without paying for anything.
Nice.
Also, Ben, I went and saw Red Riding Hood. I think that has some of your favorite actors/actresses in it.
I mean, I don't think so at all. I like Gary Oldman, but that's about it.
Yeah. And I thought you liked Amanda Seyfried, too.
I mean, I do like her.
Chloe, I know that.
She's not, by any stretch of the imagination, one of my favorite actresses.
Yeah, the movie was pretty cheesy. Dialogue was bad. The set design and the costumes were really awesome, though. My review of it is at notjustnewmovies.com if you want to know the ins and outs of why I went on a Friday night by myself to watch Red Riding Hood. That's besides the point.
Nice.
But, yeah. Anything? Yeah, Gary Oldman was crazy in that thing.
Like his character was crazy? Or?
Yeah, well, yeah, obviously.
Okay. Well, I didn't know if you meant that he was, like, crazy intense, put in, like, a Christian Bale-level performance in Red Riding Hood.
No, not at all. This role did not... Yeah, you really could have just mailed it in if you were an actor.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Anything else you've been consuming, Tyler?
No, that's it.
All right. Michelle, how about you? What have you been checking out this week?
Well, just to touch on video games really quickly, I tried Rift, which is a new MMO that came out, and I consumed a lot of that this week. I got to level 50, which was max cap, and then I sort of got bored and I'm back to World of Warcraft. But on the TV front, I feel boring there because I've been watching just Colbert Report and things I watch every week like Tosh.0 and Real Time with Bill Maher. And, I haven't watched anything new recently. So hearing you guys talk about these new shows you've checked out, I feel like I'm missing out. But I am looking forward to Game of Thrones, which is coming to HBO, I think, in April. I watched The Fighter. You mentioned Christian Bale. He was very intense in that movie.
Yep.
I thought it was decent, but not like this epic, groundbreaking movie that you had to see. Like everybody was making it out to be. Have you guys seen it? Am I wrong there? What do you think?
Tyler and Joe, did you get a chance to check it out? Check out The Fighter?
No, man. I sold the town, though. That's the same thing, right?
Whatever. Yeah, probably.
Same year. Tyler, you know?
I've seen Fever Pitch, but I know that had nothing to do with it.
Whatever. It's like the true story of Irish Mickey Ward, the boxer, and Dickie, his like cokehead brother, who was played by Christian Bale. And I couldn't take it. He was all like shaky and frantic. I mean, it was a good performance. There was definitely good acting going on here, yeah. But by the end of the movie, I just had enough of Marky Mark and Christian Bale.
I got a chance to see it, and I liked the movie a lot. I didn't think it necessarily deserved to be up for Best Picture at the Oscars this year. I thought it was a good movie, but not like one of the 10 best of the year. I thought that was kind of an arbitrary selection for the Academy.
Yes. I think I had expectations that were way too high going in because of that, and that sort of damaged my view of it at the end. But yeah, a good movie, but I don't know about, you know, all the acclaim it did get.
Yeah. I mean, we should say that it's much more than just like a boxing movie. It depicts, it's like, it concentrates way more on the family dynamics and stuff between, like you said, Mickey Ward and his brother and his family and his mother, who's this like kind of controlling matriarch. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of great performances, and the movie's definitely worth seeing, I would mm-hmm. I think. Just, maybe lower your expectations a bit and you'll probably enjoy it a lot more.
Yes. Other than that, I don't know. Okay. I'm addicted to my Netflix instant queue. I just sort of turn that on and roll through. I've got all the old Saturday Night Lives in there right now. So that's about it.
Now, Michelle, do you have a podcast on pop culture as well?
We used to have the Pop Hangover podcast that we did for a summer that was all about pop culture, but you know, it was just no time for that between the other podcasts and getting up the websites. Once we, you know, started focusing into launching the network, which we have like 13 sites now, I think we sort of had to drop some stuff and that got cut.
Nice.
Cool. Okay, so for me, I teased this last week, and I did actually get a chance to go to the House of Blues, I guess this was last Sunday, and see a band called Steel Panther. I won tickets to this website through, or I'm sorry, to this concert through the House of Blues' like Twitter account or whatnot, and this thing was absolutely ludicrous. It was like stepping into a time machine and going back to 1985 to see a hair metal concert on the Sunset Strip. Like, that's exactly what it was. If you guys are unfamiliar, Steel, which I'm sure you are, because Steel Panther is like a local cover band, but they in Los Angeles, they
playing at House of Blues. Nice.
Yeah, I know. They're like the house band, I guess. They play there every Monday night or something. They have like a consistent schedule at the House of Blues, so good for them. But this concert is like an event. You can tell that the people who go there are regulars who go every week to see this crazy stuff. And it's like half of it is you know, covers of hair metal songs from the 80s and 90s and stuff, these like really big, you know, anthem rock kind of songs. They played Living on a Prayer and a bunch of like Def Leppard stuff, you know, Photograph, Pour Some Sugar on Me, all the kind of classic stuff that you would expect.
When the Children Cry, Ben?
No, they didn't play that one. I remember you hypothesizing about that last week. They actually didn't do that. Or they stayed away from Journey, too. I was kind of surprised about that.
Were there any props involved, Ben?
There were a ton of props. This entire group, their whole concept is like they are, in theory, a band that made like was on the rise back in the 80s with Guns N' Roses and all these other bands, and then they just like mysteriously vanished for a long time and have come back completely unaware that the music scene has changed and they're still playing these old songs, basically. So the other half of the concert was them kind of interacting with the audience and stuff, which basically, honestly, to be completely honest, just devolved into them pulling hot girls up on the stage and asking them to bare their breasts, basically. It was, like, ridiculous. Like, this thing, I was there with a friend of mine from work, and she was visibly uncomfortable because was
going on. Nice.
So I had no idea, really.
Did you give her the kiss tongue every once in a while? It's like,
No, I tried to keep it professional, Tyler. Thank you very much.
Oh, good job. I'm taking her to the concert then.
Yeah, I know. That was a bad call. But no, we had a lot of fun. It was really, really ridiculous. There was an opening band too. I have to mention this. They were awful, by the way. I believe their name was Wood.
Fitting for the night.
Exactly. But Wood was a type of band that took themselves way too seriously and just played like real metal instead of like the goofy kind of hair metal that Steel Panther did. And Wood, the microphone for the lead singer, was literally a broadsword stabbed into the ground with a microphone like attached to the handle of it that the guy sang into. I thought
that's pretty cool.
Really ludicrous,
Luda.
Yeah, I guess that's a precursor to our discussion later on.
Well, what song did they close with? We had a discussion on what song they were going to close with.
I think Living on a Prayer was their closer. I don't recall. I should have written that down. But
did they sing Europe's Countdown?
No, the Final Countdown. No, because that's like a 9-minute song or something.
No, that would have been epic, man. That would have been total Steel Panther.
Yeah, this band is very, they've written some of their own, music and stuff too, and it's kind of funny if you're into that kind of, you know, hair metal rock or whatever. You can go to their website. I think it's steelpantherrocks.com. So
already there.
check that out. Okay, so let's go ahead and move on into our review of Gamer. Turn me around.
Call it a game.
Slayers gives the gamer full control of a human being in full-scale combat.
But the players are real.
Every one of our Slayers is a death row inmate. Stay alive for 30 sessions, you get set free. That's not a bad deal.
Some try to beat the system.
Get me out of here!
But no one has ever survived.
Cable's a perfect soldier. He is what they want.
27 battles. There was a redundant man who was ever come that close.
It ain't just a game. We're all slaves.
Some of them want to.
My husband, he's due to be released soon.
Your wife and your daughter need you. It's the only thing that keeps you alive.
We know where she is.
So I can beat them, not with you controlling me. You want to win? Turn me loose.
You're pulling all the strings around here.
I think if you do it, you're mine, boy.
All right, so Gamer is a movie that was directed in 2009 by Mark Neveldine and Brian Taylor. You guys might recognize those names because they were the writer-director duo responsible for Crank, the Jason Statham film, as well as its sequel, Crank 2. And yeah, let's just go around the circle very briefly. Everybody just give some kind of quick thoughts about, you know, general thoughts. What did you guys think of this movie? Michelle, let's start with you.
Interesting concept, executed not so well, in my opinion. I thought they did a really good job of capturing the feel of what it's like to be in a video game. That just, you know, it left me sort of at the end.
Okay. All right. Joe, how about you?
Well, she just said everything I kind of wanted to say, but
oh, sorry.
It looked great. Just sometimes the story just kind of slacked or was a bit confusing. Like, the colors were amazing.
Mm-hmm. All right. Tyler?
The shifts in visual were a little disconcerting, where it felt like there was a feed between you and the movie that was constantly adjusting, which I didn't enjoy, but I understood why they put it in there, because it could have been like playing a game.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the scenes were pretty gross, but other than that, yeah, I kind of agree with you and Joe. It's like, story was you know, kind of your run of the mill work to the top, finally beating the guy, but visually it looked pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree. The story clearly has been done before and better in movies like The Running Man and you know, other really popular ones. Even like less popular movies, I think, have done this kind of story to maybe equal effect. Like Joe and Tyler, I don't know if you were with me when we watched a movie called The Condemned with Stone Cold Steve Austin. It was like it may or may not have been directed DVD. I don't remember. Oh no, it did get like
the prisoner on the island. There's in like a reality show.
Yeah. And kind of like even like the Death Race remake with Jason Statham, you know, kind of mines a lot of the same territory. Yeah, like, you know, you guys had mentioned the visuals and stuff, and Neveldine and Taylor are known for their like super kinetic, ridiculous cinematography and stuff, and they get on rollerblades and skate like 35 miles an hour and capture all these crazy camera angles and stuff, and they use a lot of like fisheye lenses and like really
It looks like a Katy Perry video, some of the scenes. It was just a bit much.
Yeah. But I kind of liked the movie more than I thought I was going going in, to be honest. I had heard like really bad stuff about this, so I didn't even see it in theaters when it came out. This was my first viewing of it. And I think it brings up a lot of interesting ideas in a decent way, whether or not the movie itself is actually executed as effectively is kind of up for debate. But I don't know, Michelle, the reason I wanted to have you on for this discussion is like your relationship to video games, I guess Warcraft in particular, in which you control mm-hmm. an avatar. I think this movie kind of provides an interesting look at that relationship between a gamer and his and her avatar. What did you make of that depiction in this movie?
Yeah, like you say, I mean, they had a lot of interesting concepts, and that being one of them. And I could definitely relate, you know, just even not only with Warcraft, where you do have this character and you level it up and you gear it up and it does feel like a part of you, but also like PlayStation Home. And I've never played, I've played The Sims, but I haven't played, what's that other one? The
Second Life. Yeah.
Yeah. Second Life, I guess people were comparing it to that. I don't know. Like I love the concepts of this movie and you know, the fact that for those of you who don't know, there are, you know, people out there controlling other human beings through a process where they, you know, they have something injected into their brain, and you know, and I guess prisoners can compete and they can win their freedom. But you know, when I talk about that, I just end up thinking about Running Man or other, you know, movies where it was done but done better. So it does feel sort of shadowed. Like I have seen this before and I have seen it done better, but like you said, Ben, I think that the concepts are, or the things that this movie makes you think about are definitely interesting, and they make sense in our world today. You know, are we heading toward that? And especially as gamers, I think people out there are going to be able to relate to it. So if you are a gamer, I think it's still worth watching just to maybe make you think. But I don't think it's so good at the end of the day.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's worth watching for the concepts alone. Tyler and Joe, what did you guys think about that kind of relationship between, you know, the gamer and the avatar?
Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet, man. I'd probably participate in that.
Would you really? Like, legitimately, if that were an option, would you do that?
Well, I mean, I'd probably pay and be controlled. I mean, that'd be pretty fun, right?
As long as you didn't die, right? Like with paintballs, is that what you mean? Maybe something, beanbags?
Yeah, I guess the distinction should be made. Would you participate in Slayers or Society? These are the two different games.
No, Society, because I don't think you can die in Society.
Okay, all right.
But you can have like creepy fat dudes controlling you. You like that?
Yeah, what happens later in the movie, I'm sure we'll talk about this, is Gerard Butler's character, Cable, or no, is it Cable or Cassie?
Yeah, it's Cable.
Cable comes through like the other virtual world and just decimates this guy with a pacemaker. That poor guy.
The thing about that is I don't think that it is a virtual world. I think it's just like a section of our normal world that people go to, like this kind of roped off, like electronically sealed off area where people go to it. So it's not even like he's, you know, like, I don't know, transferring dimensions or anything weird like that. He's just physically going into a building where these people are being kind of controlled. And he just, it's like snaps that dude's back and then just drags his wife out of it back to the...
They invented virtual world realities.
Who did?
It's I don't know. The Michael C. Hall's character.
Oh, Ken Castle, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think like that part of the – or Tyler, let's go to you before I keep on going. What did you think about this kind of relationship?
I'm pretty unfamiliar with that kind of video game usage. I've never played World of Warcraft or any type of MMORPG.
Okay.
I had a roommate that played it all the time. A story that struck me as kind of weird was – I don't know if you heard of this, Michelle, but there was one guy – I think it was World of Warcraft or some other game where he had allotted so many dollars in the virtual world that he bought like this really huge building. Like everybody could go there, and it was like a shopping center in the virtual world. And this guy owned it, but it was like the equivalent of like $300,000 in real world money that he had spent on this property in the virtual world.
Wow, that must have been Second Life, not World of Warcraft. Yeah,
okay,
a deeper level of weirdness that I'm not familiar with.
Oh yeah, and so but they tried to justify his actions by like, oh, yeah, but it makes a lot of money for him in the virtual world. So it was a good investment on that part.
Okay.
But I don't know if you can convert virtual world dollars into real money. I think that's the technicality.
Yeah.
I don't know. In Second Life, I think you actually can sell stuff you make and, like, make money off it. There's, like, marketplaces and things. Yeah. I've never
That's the one you can buy anytime you want, right?
I think so.
Yeah. I took a class in college about kind of digital society and things of that sort, and they forced us to create a Second Life character for a semester, and we didn't really – I think we used it for, like, two class periods or something. But, yeah, I just spent the entire time flying around the city. I was like, this is ludicrous. Why are we doing this? But
this is a ludicrous episode.
Are you still in that world? Like, is Ben P still just kind of dicking around in Second Life?
You know, I don't know. I'm not sure. I should have just, set him on cruise control and fly out to the ocean or something.
He just orbits the Earth constantly like a satellite.
Oh, that would be awesome. Yeah, every once in a while, like, people set their, like, virtual clocks by the appearances of Ben flying through the sky.
He's like Haley's Comet. They're like, oh no, here comes Ben P. And he just flies past the city.
Oh, that would be awesome.
All right, back on track.
Sorry. Oh, man. Okay. I don't know. Like, what did you guys think of the kind of, I guess, the just for lack of a better term, the action in this movie? You know, the game scenes and things of that sort. Joe, what did you think? Do you think it was, like, well done, or do you think, like, the shaky cam stuff got a little too out of control?
Yeah, it was a little too busy and hectic for my taste. It was really loud, and I wasn't a big fan of it. But I don't play video games, so I couldn't... I was told you could appreciate it more if you played more first-person shooters,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know.
Okay. Michelle, what did you think?
I play a lot of first-person shooters, and I didn't appreciate it. I know why they did it, and it, like I said, they did a good job of sort of capturing the feel of it, but I think they went over the top. I found it annoying. It was just too much shakiness, too much loudness, and just too gritty. I don't know. Too much for me.
There was definitely there was a lot of particles and stuff flying around.
Yeah, and it was just overdone, like, for the sake of being overdone. You could have got that same feel without being so overt about it.
Yeah. Tyler?
It looked pretty good to me. I've seen people playing newer first-person shooters, and
mm-hmm.
I thought it looked pretty well done as far as trying to not only examine what a real video game looks like, but also trying to apply it as if it was happening in the real world. You see mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Like, making the real world look like a video game, I thought they did pretty well.
Yeah, the production...
My experience with GoldenEye on N64 doesn't really allow
that
further in that discussion.
Yeah, the production design was really good, I thought, and there were a lot of kind of bombed out buildings and stuff, and it had, like, kind of a cool look to it. But I think, I mean, more than even the first person stuff, it was almost like third person. You know, a lot of times the camera was, like, back behind Gerard Butler as he's, like, running through the rubble and everything. And there's that one particular shot where it shows Simon, who's played by Logan Lerman, like, controlling him, and it shows kind of what the camera, like, what Simon is seeing, and the camera is right behind him, and it shows, like, the little, every time Gerard Butler, like, kills somebody, like, the points actually pop up on the screen and stuff, and he's running through these kind of burned out cars and stuff like that too, and he's just, like, turning left and right and, like, shooting people and going through this whole thing, and, like, we're led to believe that that is what Simon is seeing the whole time. He's not necessarily, like, in Gerard Butler's head looking through his eyes and stuff. It's not like that, you know, that kind of intense of an experience. I think the camera is a little bit more separated than that in the world of Slayers, the game. So, but yeah, there's like kind of an interesting thing where the, like, one of the guards or something asks Cable, like, who aims? Is it the player or is it the Slayer? And, like, the relationship between the two, I think, is really interesting here. Like, you know, Cable gives this long answer about how it's basically him pulling the trigger, and, like, the kid can kind of point his body in certain directions and stuff. And we see that early on in the movie where he, like, hears Gerard Butler, you know, Cable's character, hears somebody step on a piece of glass and, like, mutters under his breath, like, turn me around. This is before the ability of Simon to actually communicate with Cable, but
mm-hmm.
and then eventually he does, and, like, just at the last second he's able to kill this guy. But I thought that was kind of an interesting thing, is, like, Cable was like really right there in it, and yeah, these people are actually dying and stuff around him. This is not like a game in the you know, most pure fun sense of the word. This is life and death, and that's the entire point of the movie. So there's also this aspect of the people who are playing the game, or who are playing Slayers, are felon, you know, convicted felons and murderers and rapists and all these things. And
obviously that's what makes it okay.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's the thing is, like, Logan Lerman's character is, when he gets that chip, that mod, if you will, where he can actually speak to Cable as he's playing, he says this. He's like, yeah, I mean, you guys are all convicted, whatever. Anyway, you know, it's fine. Like, you guys all have it coming to you, or they all have it coming to them. And then Cable says, like, does that, I guess that goes for me too. And Logan Lerman's like, well, you're different. And he's like, why am I different? He's like, well, you're different because you're mine. And I think that kind of attachment is kind of an interesting thing. It's like he's just putting blinders on. Like, yes, his guy has killed somebody, and in theory, everybody else's, you know, avatar has killed someone. Why is this one any different than any others? I mean, did you guys think anything about that?
No, man, he was a 17-year-old kid.
What you said? Was he a 17-year-old kid? Is that what you said?
He was just a little dick.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sort of appeals to that inside us all, that little 17-year-old dick who's just like, fuck it, this is my... Oh, sorry, I swore.
No,
this is
okay.
Mine. I'm, you know, I'm going to shoot... I'm going to shoot things up. I mean, but, you know, you brought up how, who controls what, and I thought that that was really interesting, because I just got to connect. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. It's like the thing for the Xbox 360 where it's full motion control, and there are shooters coming out now, I believe, where you're going to be able to stand in front of it and sort of control a character, and, you know, it's going to almost be like we're entering into this gamer world where we are controlling with our body, not just a controller. Because I think once you remove the controller, it starts to feel a lot more real.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So I don't know. I hope we're not going there in the future. But I mean, I was sort of using the Kinect, and I'm playing Dance Central right now, which, you know, you're dancing and you're not using a controller. And I thought back to this movie, you know, sort of like that kid. What was his name?
Simon, I think.
Simon,
that's right, in that virtual, you know, world. And there's some cool shots of him. I mean, he's got, like, what, a screen surrounded, you know, him 360 degrees, and he's controlling Gerard Butler's character. And it's just, like you said, there's a lot of cool ideas and a lot of cool concepts in this. And I think that that was just another one, how, you know, once you take away the control or the freedom of just controlling a game, it starts to feel a lot more real.
Yeah, and the world building and stuff was really cool too, like, especially in that room, you know, in Minority Report, that was like one of the first times that we had seen that kind of like...
I get to do that.
Do you really?
Yeah, I get to move like menus with my hands. It's awesome.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, I mean, we see like Tom Cruise put these gloves on and stuff and just like transfer things from screens to screens.
Yes.
And in this, it's like taken to another level where Simon's not even wearing anything. He's just like moving his hands around and manipulating these kinds of digital environments that are around him. But Tyler, I think I cut you off. What were you going to say?
Have any of you ever read Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury?
I have not.
Michelle?
I think I had to in college.
Was Joe?
Yes.
No.
Anyway, the environment that they're living in Fahrenheit 451, the whole point of the book was that...
They burn books, right?
They burn books, yeah, because 450 degrees Fahrenheit is when paper explodes into flames.
Yeah.
But the firefighter is the main character, and his wife stays at home all day, and she has three... wall-sized televisions that she watches, okay? Mm-hmm. So they're like one room, or she has one room, and three of the walls are just TVs.
Mm-hmm.
And she's constantly, like, harassing and nagging at the firefighter to make enough money to buy the fourth wall, which would completely surround her with television, so she wouldn't have to leave the house, basically. She would never have to go anywhere, because everything's right there. And so the whole point of the book was... him trying to, because books were illegal, and he finally, well, let me just spoil the book for you. he eventually realizes how important books are, so he's on the run, basically, by the government, and he escapes out into the wilderness, like into the rural areas, and he finds other people that like books too, and then I think the last part of the book is the city, like, explodes with a nuclear explosion. It's just one of those, like, really pessimistic endings where, hey, I found a group of people that agree with me, and then the city and everything he knew just explodes.
It sounds kind of like Equilibrium, that Christian Bale movie. I don't know if you guys have seen that one, but he plays like an enforcer who has to basically like weed out everybody who's reading books and kind of, you know,
right. But the point,
all that stuff.
Yeah, the point I was trying to make was that like, Gamer kind of touches on that theme where. We don't have to live amongst ourselves or have like a community anymore when we have these games that mm-hmm. can't kind of surround us and basically create our own little world mm-hmm. where we don't have to interact and we don't mm-hmm. have to, we don't need human contact, you know, quote unquote human species contact.
Right.
Anymore, because we have society and we have slayers to kind of get our juices flowing instead of real.
Sounding a lot like Surrogates, which is a Bruce Willis movie that's also on Instant Queue that I've heard about. Apparently, it's just people and they're all like at home in their bathrobes, but living as avatars in the world. And after seeing Gamer, I want to go see this too to see how that relates to it. So, like you say, it's a popular theme these days, but it's still interesting because it's relevant.
Yeah, definitely.
Joe, you've seen Surrogates, right?
No, but it's funny. Someone actually told me I should see it because of this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm super interested.
Mm-hmm. I think it's like one of the only, you know, relatively modern movies that have come out in the past, whatever, 5 years or something that has dealt with this theme like so on the nose. Like it's so specific. I mean, other movies like, you know, The Social Network, even to some degree, it kind of touches on the, you know, our relationship with these kinds of digital media and things of that sort. But this is just like so very blatant, like you are physically controlling another human being and things of that sort. And that's kind of what Surrogates gets into a little bit as well. I also haven't seen that movie, but I mean, I know enough about it to know that that's what it's about. What's that, Joe?
The Social Network, that was trash.
Dude. Oh, I was going to watch that last night. Is it bad?
No, it's not bad.
I'll check it out, Michelle.
It's very good.
You're going to have conflicting you're going to have conflicting views among this panel.
Yeah, Michelle. Joe, we all kind of write for the same website or whatever, and I put up a review of The Social Network back when it came out, and Joe just put up one, and there's been this kind of comment war based
on... I like that, though. I like conflicting opinions.
Yeah,
me too.
So,
but it, back to Gamer, it brings up a couple other political almost ideas as far, you know, not just, you know, individual versus community versus, you know, how much control, but they also bring up ideas of like Castle, like helping the government actually allowing him to do this because there was so much money involved that the government just kind of turned and said, okay, yeah, we're going to, you know, boost our economy with this kind of business.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And at one point the humans underground group are talking about healthcare and stuff like that, stuff that is actually going on right now, which was all solved because of this. You know, people can put these nanites or whatever in your brain to replace your cells that would make you live longer, you know, cures diseases, stuff like this.
Yeah.
And they even say, they're like, you know, who's going to say no to that?
Mm-hmm.
You
right.
know, it just kind of like hits you like, oh crap. What, you know, who,
yeah,
how is the public going to respond when stuff like this says, hey, do you want to do this, or do you want to live inside your video game, or do you want to live out in the real world? And people are, you know, I'm going to guarantee you a large percentage of the population is going to say, I'd rather live in a video game.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, what is the end game for this whole thing? It's like, where are we going to end up as a society if, like, all of our kind of physical problems and things like that and life can be extended and all of that by these nanites and stuff? Yeah, it's a very good point.
And you see how fickle the public is even throughout the movie, because at one point they're supporting Castle and Slayers and this game and the society, but then towards the end when everything is being broadcast, you know, everyone's against Castle now. Mm-hmm. So you're like, come on, American public or world public.
Yeah.
Make a decision.
Yeah, it's really that thing kind of struck me. I wrote that down as kind of a one of the notes that I took as striking me as particularly strange is that they're, you know, everybody cheers as soon as Castle gets stabbed in the gut at the end. And it's like, why? What's their change of heart there? Because he's, you know, it's common knowledge, like how the technology of Slayers and society works, because he goes on that talk show in the very beginning and kind of explains the whole thing, which is actually kind of a brilliant little piece of screenwriting to like bring us as the audience into this world and explain it pretty organically, I thought. But, you know, like these people know what's going on. And then at the very end, when it's all broadcast, it's like, what's the big reveal here that they didn't know before? It's like he's just standing there in a room kind of beating Gerard Butler to a pulp because he is controlling them, but there's really not that much different than what we saw before, right?
Yeah, it was because they were being enslaved. They just found out.
But was that, I guess I was unclear on that. Was that something that he had already been doing, or was that something that Ken Castle planned? What's that?
He had been doing it, but on the down low. He was masquerading as a plan to, yeah, further health and create entertainment. But really, he was trying to control everybody for political and, you know, sinister reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I was just unclear as to how that affected everyone, because I thought it was only, like, affecting the people who volunteered to be in society or slayers, because they're the only ones that got, like, the nanites kind of installed into their cortex or whatever.
Yeah, and I don't know how the public figured that out, because it didn't start broadcasting until after he had revealed all that.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
that whole part was kind of, I think they were like, let's end it.
I think one of the pages told them or something.
Okay.
Like, hey guys.
Pages. There was there was an information feed at the bottom of the video. It was like, oh, okay, let's catch up.
You mentioned that whole humans group before, and the leader was actually Ludacris. We should say that, literally.
Yes.
What did you guys think of their role in this? Were you kind of fighting
really
for them? Or you did?
I think, yeah, because they were like the vintage gamers versus the kind of the
new wave.
The new wave gamers. You know, they had the arcade machines and they were playing like air hockey and stuff. And I was like, this is probably where I'd hang out because I have no connection with society or slayers or any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was kind of funny because, you know, they served political differences, but they also had like the vintage gamer group versus the newer gamers.
Yes, that's a good point.
Joe, what did you think about the humans?
With a Z.
Buddha. You know, for such a technologically advanced society, they had a pretty bad internet feed. It was really grainy. It kind of bothered me then.
Yeah, every time Ludacris would pop up, you know, he would hijack a feed. Like, his face would be, like, three offset kind of meeting in the middle sometimes. And, like, other times he would repeat certain catchphrases over and over again inexplicably.
He had 8-bit graphics.
It had a likable element to the movie because, like I said, Simon, his character, he was just kind of a, you know, like a just a jerk of a kid. And then... I guess Cable was okay, but Gerard Butler's such a vanilla actor, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't really sell me. I thought Michael C. Hall really outshined him, and I wish that he had more scenes.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
Like,
I mean,
I love Michael C. Hall.
He was almost not even there.
Yeah, I mean, anybody who has seen this movie can recognize the absolute insanity of the... when Michael C. Hall sings "I've Got You Under My Skin" at the end, that kind of dance number and stuff, like
jazz hands.
Any actor who can pull that off, like, as, you know, kind of creepily and awesomely as Michael C. Hall did, I think, yeah, I totally agree, Joe. He shines here, and he didn't have enough to work with because they chose to go with Gerard Butler. I mean, clearly he's the protagonist in the movie, but like you were saying, he didn't really sell you or, like, you know, force you to kind of relate to him because he just kept expressionless the entire time. I feel like
I wasn't fighting for him. I wasn't like into it. Maybe if I was, it would have been a little better.
And like, it implies in the very beginning why Cable has been brought in there, you know, with like the reverse shot of the guy getting shot in the head and stuff. And like, we know what's going to happen, that of course Michael C. Hall, this kind of overlord archetype, is going to be responsible, you know, in a flashback for putting Cable in there in the first place. I mean, that's the same stuff that happens in Death Race and all these other movies that we've talked about already. So we kind of knew that was coming, but Gerard Butler didn't necessarily do anything to play like the tortured hero who's in there of, you know, who's like wrongly imprisoned. It just felt like he was kind of into it the whole time. Like he should have been like more resistant to the idea, and when instead he actually embraced it, it seemed like.
Well, I think after so many fights, like 27, Ever.
Yeah, maybe if this movie took place over the course of like fights 1 through 5 or something, then it might have been a different Cable, and maybe I don't know, maybe that's a choice that they made, is like, okay, we're telling it at this point in the story, and maybe that character did kind of go through this progression, and now he's just like hardened to the life that he's living or something. So I guess
we should have seen more glimpses into his human side, though, I think, where he was feeling remorseful, like you said, and then I think we could have connected to him. I really did feel like he was just this avatar, that, and I didn't even feel like a connection between him and his wife, that who I guess was involved in the other game.
Right.
I didn't feel like, oh, he really wants to get her out. I don't know. Like, I saw it happening on screen, but I didn't feel connected to the character. So whether that was a bad acting or a bad direction for them of mm-hmm. what way they wanted to go, I think that that's a good point, though. Like you said, though, I didn't feel like he really cared. But and I thought that for me as a somebody watching, that wasn't, you know, aiding in my enjoyment of the film.
Yeah.
I really dug that he was this blind force of rage,
like
just sweeping through this.
I
video
wanted a nice guy who was going to cry when he killed people. Come on.
Yeah, no, because when you're playing video games, you want your character to have all the cheats attached so that
he's
you're
not
invulnerable.
Playing. See, I wanted to see Simon like that, but I wanted to see him like sort of fighting Simon against that. I think like Simon as the guy who's like us, the gamer who cares, kill. But I think the person being controlled, if he was more like, "Don't make me do this," that would have been better. Would have been more compelling.
Yeah. Yeah. There was almost.
Didn't you just kind of hide the whole time? I mean, that's what I do in first-person shooters anyway.
Just camp. Yeah.
Just stow away in a corner and.
Yeah, you just look into a corner and jump up and down and wait until somebody frags you from behind or something.
I like the people buying stuff during the game that were in like the destruction and like blood would just splatter on their face while they're
Grand Theft
exchanging.
Daughters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People are just walking around during the destruction.
Yeah, were those the people, because I think John Leguizamo was in this movie, for like 2 minutes or something.
Why were those people just walking around?
Yeah, I think those people were like
GTA. They're just people walking around. They're just extra meat that could mm-hmm. be part of the environment.
I think those people were the people that John Leguizamo was telling Cable about, that like they were... basically they had to survive just one match instead of all 30 or whatever. Like, they were these kind of one-off people that were a little bit more defenseless. I don't remember. Like, that part of the movie was kind of poorly defined, I think. But
they might have been artificial intelligence-driven as opposed to gamer-driven.
Yeah, it's possible. I really don't know. That whole thing was really kind of over my head.
So when you're driving the Hummer in GTA, people are just walking across the street. They don't move.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Boom.
Oh, man.
Cab mission.
Does anybody else have anything else that they wanted to bring up? That was pretty much a lot of what I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, it was. Again, I kind of kept thinking, where do these events take place? Like, Cleveland? Is this where Gerard Butler is doing most of his damage?
Yeah, that was
New York, I think. Right?
Yeah. But where do they have like desolated areas of the city that they can use for explosions and firefights and stuff?
Well, it's the future, Tyler. Anything could be like that in the future.
That's right.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
Ben, did you especially get kind of a animus from Assassin's Creed feel to this movie?
Yeah, a little bit. Mm-hmm. And almost like some Matrix, you know, flashbacks here and there, too. With just like the controlled and like the weapons upgrades and stuff. Like, the animus, I think, was more of like Simon in his room kind of controlling, you know, that whole kind of interactive construct or whatnot. But
they'd have to go back in time to implant nanites into the assassin's brain.
I mean, if nothing else, this gives me hope for potentially maybe an Assassin's Creed movie that could be okay. I don't know.
Yeah.
Dude, that'd be pretty awesome. Fatty.
I'd much rather see that than Gamer 2. No offense.
Absolutely.
Maybe Gamer 2 is Assassin's Creed, the movie.
Crossover.
Boom. Rick Rape was hilarious. Just not the person or the character, just the name. Because he was just like, "Oh, Rick Rape, what are you doing here?" And I busted out laughing.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, Joe, you had seen this before, right? Because I remember you telling me about the character of Rick Rabe.
Yeah, he's probably one of my top 10 favorite movie characters of all time.
Wow, he's only on screen for like 2 minutes.
Yeah,
and
but
he's
that was,
constantly fidgeting inside his pants.
That was the brilliance of him. Like, he was clearly some guy just working, and he was being controlled by some pervert. And, you know, he's probably making the equivalent of just above minimum wage, and you know he's trying to score with you know Gerard Butler's wife, and then he just, you know, it's all of a sudden, bam, back broken, dead. So much worse problem for Ray.
Yeah, Tyler, one thing that we didn't mention, you were talking about, like, especially with the Fahrenheit 451 thing, with like the three walls and stuff, and like being completely enclosed into the society. I think that like this movie does, I don't know, maybe a decent job of showing like what humanity could look like in if that were to be the case, as depicted with those really fat, sweaty, you know, dudes just like rolling around in their wheelchairs, like controlling everybody, like obesity chairs, not even like real wheelchairs, just because like they're so fat that they can't even move and stuff. I think that's like the movie's warning to America is like, please, for the love of God, let's not get to this point.
Well, Michelle, were you offended in any way by the kind of stereotype that they did with gamers there? Because I mean, I'm not really that hardcore of a gamer, but I would be kind of, you know, if I'm like a what would I say, like a casual World of Warcraft or some type of MMORPG player, you know, I wouldn't really enjoy seeing my stereotype as a gamer on as like this really fat, sweaty slob.
I guess I really didn't think of that. I mean, not much offends me, so maybe I'm not the best judge of that. But, you know, that's a good point you bring up. That I think they did sort of do that for shock value, though, like that stereotypical big, like, fat, sweaty guy who doesn't leave his house. But that just speaks to this movie. It's like everything to extremes, from their shaky cameras to that, to the visuals. It was like, you know, it wouldn't have made sense. It was just a normal-looking, you know, person there. But then they did have Simon, who sort of spoke to the stereotypical, you know, other side of gaming, some punk kid. But, you know, there is some realism there. But in this day and age, I feel like the majority of people do play games in some way these days. So I feel like maybe in the future, even more people would. So I, you know, it's a good point. Why did they take it there? Why wasn't it just, I feel like I should have had a character I connected to more in the outside world. Cause Simon just didn't do it for me. I wasn't like, okay, Simon, you know, pull him through this, get it done. And obviously it wasn't the fat guy controlling his wife. It was just like the outside world. The person I found myself like liking the best was, like you said, Dexter's, who I called Dexter, my Dusty Hall's character. He was the guy that I, not that I was rooting for because he was bad, but he was like the only guy in the outside world that I felt like was badass and cool. And you know, that I was sort of into.
He was the only one with any sort of personality, basically.
Yes, exactly. It was very bland. And you know, you had Ken Castle, who was just this crazy guy that I found myself like liking his scenes, and everything else was just sort of boring.
I kept thinking of South Park, their World of Warcraft episode where the strongest character in the game is just some guy with like his wrist protector, and he's like clicking away, and then he finally loses and he's just like staring at the screen, and then he just starts over.
But I mean, there are people like that. I mean, I had an experience. My roommate played about 12 hours a day. And I know Tyler, yours played a lot too, to the point
where he played every day too. He got meningitis.
His eyes would flicker back and forth.
Yeah. Oof. Oh, I've actually had two roommates that did that. And yeah, one of them flickered back and forth. The other one got meningitis.
Man, you guys got some winners there.
But Joe, the point I'm trying to make is that like those, especially, and the people in the movie were kind of the extremes, where they're all casual players that, you know, play these games, but they're not completely detached from real society. They just play the games because they're fun.
I mean, definitely the guy controlling the castles or Cable's wife. I mean, he was an extreme exaggeration.
Mm-hmm. And neither him nor Simon, I don't think, had jobs. I don't know what supports their. I mean, obviously Simon's dad was supporting his gaming.
Yeah, and I think it was implied that
fair. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was implied that Simon is like this gaming superstar who also like somehow makes money from his gaming. Like, I don't know.
He's a rock star. He was talking to the cum dumpsters.
Wow, that was disturbing. Yeah. Like all of the little tags and stuff, even with like society, with those characters running around, like one of them said like "ow my balls" or something. Like you know, there's a lot of these like really ridiculous usernames and stuff just like attached, floating above these people as they're going around in the society world. I thought it was kind of interesting.
Yeah, gamer somewhat tag, accurate. Yeah.
Cool. All right, well, let's go around the circle and just do some kind of concluding thoughts, I guess, before we fully wrap this episode up. So, Joe, any was your mind changed in any way after this discussion, or are you pretty much sticking with your guns?
No, it didn't sell me to want to play games. I like I said, there were some aspects of the movie. The soundtrack was pretty cool. There was some there was a Marilyn Manson song that was playing a couple times that was really, really kind of got you psyched for the action.
Yeah.
But like I said, Gerard Butler, not a big fan, brought the movie down. 5 out of 10.
Okay, all right. Michelle, how about you?
I have to agree. I mean, I think Gerard Butler didn't really shine where he would have had to make this movie great. Maybe a wonderful performance would have helped a little bit, but it didn't. And I'm just glad listening to you guys hearing you sort of agree, you know, interesting concepts, but maybe not done so well, but it still made you think. And any movie that makes you think, I think, is worth seeing.
Yeah, absolutely. Tyler, how about you?
Three things. That Under My Skin song, I think, was sung by Sammy Davis Jr.
Oh, excuse me. Sorry.
Yeah.
Popularized by Frank Sinatra. But.
Yeah. And then that Marilyn Manson song, Joe, was actually originally a Eurythmics song with Annie Lennox. And finally, when he snaps that guy's neck on the basketball court, I'm pretty sure that's a technical 4 out of 10.
Nice. Michelle pretty much summed it up. Like, great ideas, kind of meh execution. I think the movie is definitely worth seeing, if for no other reason than just to put it on mute and watch the visuals. And Neville Dean and Taylor are really kind of masters at making this kind of super hyper kinetic, really ridiculous looking movie. And if you guys have seen the Crank films, then you know kind of what you're in for. And then also, like we said earlier, the production design and stuff. Joe had mentioned the colors and the kind of vibrancy and everything. There's a scene where they're going to a nightclub and people are getting shot and stuff, and their blood splatters all over the place, but it's all like used in black light and stuff. And like, even something as gross as that looks pretty cool. You know,
like people start making out.
Yeah, there's a lot of gratuitous nudity and stuff.
Yeah,
like that
random boobs. Well. There's all sorts of stuff.
But it was offset, I might add, by Michael C. Hall's gratuitous shirt ripping scene.
Ah, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He had to bring it, so he had to get rid of that thing.
Nice. Okay, cool. Well, Tyler, you want to rev up the Apple II and see what we're going to be watching next week?
Yeah, let's just turn on the Apple II and pull the ridiculously sized lever and see what we're watching. All right, Ben and panel, we're watching The Italian Job, both the new version and the old version. Nice. Michael Caine's in one of them.
Double feature again. Nice, good stuff. It's been a while since we've had a double feature on this podcast.
Yeah, I was really hoping.
How
I was really hoping
just
for
crap out double features.
What's that?
How does that thing just crap out double features like that? Is there a setting, or is that on purpose, or what?
Yeah, there's a setting.
It's the Apple II, man. The mystery. It's never going to be solved. All right, let's
sometimes
move on.
It picks music videos. I don't know why.
That's not going to be fun to review at all. All right, so let's move on into our listener feedback section. You guys can always call and leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. You can also subscribe to this podcast for free in iTunes. Leave us a review if you subscribe. That'd be awesome.
Do it.
You can check us out on Facebook and on Twitter at twitter.com/NJNMpodcast. So we have a couple of new followers this week that we wanted to announce, and one of them is at @teachfilm, and the other is at @coastalmichelle, which is Michelle Madison, our co-host for this episode.
That's so right.
Thanks for the follow there, Michelle.
Sweet.
We actually don't have any emails or voicemails for this episode, so we'll just go ahead and
No ludicrous impressions?
Yeah, no ludicrous impressions. I was really disappointed about that. Last time we put out this kind of call to arms to people to send in their ludicrous impressions, and nobody did, so...
Michelle, I expect yours next week.
All right, fine. I'll work on it.
That would be awesome. So let's go ahead and move into the character name game and wrap that up. So the character's name for this week is Susan Calvin. And if anyone has any guesses as to what movie that character came from, now is the time. So let's hear it.
Mean Girls.
Mean Girls is incorrect.
Mean Girls 2.
What movies came out in wide release?
Oh, I'll give you a hint. It has something to do with a person involved in the movie Battle Los Angeles.
Corky Romano.
No, it's not Corky Romano. Well,
thank you for smoking.
No, it's not Aaron Eckhart. That's another huge...
Damn it.
You need to give him more than that, because I just used
fair enough.
Wikipedia. To find out who it was.
You and cheated?
I know. Well, no. I knew I didn't know it. I wasn't going
to
say.
I'm going to send Cheater to your wall screen.
Go for it. Just give like him the title of her. Like, what is she? Her
okay. I believe she's a doctor. I don't know. Yes. In this movie.
Cloverfield.
No, that's incorrect. This movie is also a science fiction movie, and it came out in 2004.
Starship Troopers.
No, it came out in 2004.
Starship Troopers 2.
No. It's an Isaac Asimov movie, if that
He's an author.
The island.
Rings any bells? No, it's not the island. But that's a close guess.
Asimov's an author, but he's not a director.
Right, but it's a movie based on his.
Based on his. Okay, gotcha.
I
read an Isaac Asimov story about planets, or no, multiple suns, and all the suns went out for a period of time.
Uh huh.
Is that
good
about
story?
That?
Good story, Tyler. No, that has nothing to do.
Shut
with
up.
It. Will Smith is in this movie. That's a huge.
Hancock.
iRobot,
Joe. Very, very.
There you go. I knew if you gave enough hints.
Yes. Eventually. That's how this game always works, is nobody ever.
I am a legend.
And then we just have to siphon it down. But yeah.
Fresh cool. Prince of Bel Air.
Oh, man. That's not a movie. All right. Well, let's go around the circle and everybody just tell our listeners where we can find more of your work this week on the internet. Joe, let's start with you.
I've been writing on CamelClutchBlog.com about pro wrestling.
Okay.
And that's about it recently. I still have the playing field, but that's kind of on a creative hiatus right now.
Okay. All right. Tyler, how about you?
The SolarSentinel.blogspot.com. I've been writing. Joe and I think we're going to start back Destageddon.blogspot.com. It's been kind of dormant recently, but I've just kind of had a. He and I have had a reawakening, so
okay.
Hopefully we'll be posting some more up over there, and then, yeah, that's it.
Okay, good stuff. Michelle Madison, how about you? Where can people track you down this week?
You can always find me on videogameoutsiders.com, which is my video game podcast, and pophangover.com has links to all of our websites, including foodnetworkhumor.com and damnyouautocorrect.com. And then, like you said, you can find me on Twitter/CoastalMichelle and on Facebook, Coastal Michelle as well.
Awesome. You guys can track me down on Twitter at twitter.com/BenPears. You can find me writing occasionally at geektyrant.com, filmonic.com, and notjustnewmovies.com, the namesake for this podcast, where we have March Madness going on, where Joe, Tyler, and I are actually reviewing every single movie that we see in the entire month.
So, every single movie.
So
wow.
Check that out. And you can also find me on the Geek Tyrant Weekly podcast in iTunes or, again,
yeah, that's
I said.
Yeah, that's a good show, man. I checked that out for the first time.
Oh, cool. Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
Wait, what'd you check out?
The Geek Tyrant.
The Geek Tyrant podcast.
Oh, yeah. I listen to that every week.
Nice. Thanks for the support. All right. Well, music for our show is provided by George Turner and the Bandits. You can find their music at gtbandits.com, and they're also on Twitter and Facebook, so check them out there. So as Tyler said, we're going to be watching both of the Italian Job films for next week, so feel free to check those out. Send us an email, leave us a voicemail about your thoughts on them or any other movie that we've talked about, and thanks for listening.
Or on us.
What's that?
Or on us.
Yeah, your thoughts on us in general. Yeah, that'd be great. I'm sure we'll get some interesting emails there. But special thanks to Michelle for kind of donating some of your time and stopping by and hanging out with us. I really appreciate it.
I'm glad I came. It was a good time.
Excellent. All right, cool. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you guys next week.
I've got the blues. I've got the blues. Money that I had.